The other day we were talking about some of the Tanoi who lived in Rome. So the Mishnah and the Rice of Tosefta's in different places record that there was a prominent Balabas who was a doctor, Kudus Harope, who lived in the days of the Tanoi. The Mishnah quotes him. Kudus Harope was a righteous person, and he had a practice after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. Two different minhagim developed, both based on the same idea.
Okay. It's okay.
At the current Pesach, the Beis Hamikdash, has to be broiled. So most communities today have the minhag. This is recorded in the Mishnah. Most communities have the minhag that today we don't eat broiled meat or chicken, Leil HaSeder. No one should think that we're eating kachim bachutz. You're not allowed to bring any karbonis outside of the Beis Hamikdash. Other communities have the minhag bedafke, the reverse. That on Leil Pesach, you want to make a zechel hamikdash, you should dafke eat broiled meat. Do you remember the way it used to be in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, that they had to eat the Kerb Pesach broiled? You can't have it cooked. It has to be dafke broiled. So the Mishnah says, even those who have the practice of eating davke tzli, Leil Pesach zechel hamikdash, but they shouldn't broil the whole animal altogether. That's a special din in Kerb Pesach. Rosh al kura of al kirba, you don't slice it into lamb chops first and then broil it. You broil the whole lamb, the whole goat, whatever you think, for some ahizim. You broil the whole lamb together and then you slice it after broiling. So the Mishnah says that that's not permissible today. That's a universal thing. You don't broil your meat, which is not a Kerb Pesach, like the Kerb Pesach. That's too much of a Zecha HaMikdash. That'll look as if you're eating Korbanis outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah records the practice. The Tudus HaRofe, who lived in Rome, used to do like that. His practice was he made it. He lived after the destruction. Beis HaMikdash, and his practice was to make a zechel hamikdash, to broil the flesh, to broil the animal that is going to eat on Pesach night, just like the Kerb Pesach was broiled. So the Tanoim told him they would have put him in cherem because he was violating their recommendation not to broil it, but he was a tzaddik, so they let him get away with it. Such a similar expression appears by Choni Amago, not related to this. Choni Amago lived in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, and there was a period of time that there was no rain, so he went to the Beis Hamikdash, he brought a korban, he brought a sacrifice, and then he stood outside of the Beis Hamikdash, and he drew a circle in the sand. That's why it's called Choni Amago, because he made a circle. He said, heaven, he said, God, but it's horrible. He's not going to leave the circle until it rains. He was demanding that God has to give rain. And then it started to pour. First it came a trickle. And he said, that's not what I wanted. You know what I mean. I want real rain. So it was pouring. And then it was flooding everything. Then he said, no, that's not what I asked for. I asked for normal rain. So he was speaking with chutzpah. So he said, if not for the fact that they know that he's a holy tzaddik, they would put him in cherem because of the way he spoke, because of the way he was dictating terms to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what God has to do. That's the same. Well, he said, it would have put this tudus, the doctor who lived there, would have put him in cherem also, because he was a violation of the recommendation of the Tanaim that today that there's no Beis HaMikdash. For sure you shouldn't do. You shouldn't broil the whole animal altogether. You want to eat broiled lamb chops, and just cut up the chops and then broil them separately. And he broiled the whole animal together and said that they didn't let him get away with it, but they recommended it's not really right. The rabbi was telling us in the shul on Friday that there was a prominent Talmud Chacham from Daniel. I didn't get the second name, but he wrote Ikare Hadat. Dat is a Russian name. His name is Daniel. it quoted by Ashkenazim also. It's printed in the back of the big Shulchan Aruch. It's a collection of different shuvas by different Achrayim. The different sections of the Shulchan Aruch has an davening and sixes and filling. Shabbos in different parts, he has a collection. But it's used by Ashkenazim as well. Most of the Sefer is a Likud, a collection of earlier sources. Once in a while he has an original discussion. One of the original discussions is very relevant to people in the New York area. A lot of people live in the business district, so they want to put up a sukkah so they'll be able to eat in a sukkah on sukkahs. They have to pay rent. Sometimes they have to pay rent for the use of a location. The question is, they have a sukkah, they're using a Chol HaMoed, but then they're not going to be there for Shana Rabbah, Shmini Atzeres, and they're not going to be there. Is it permissible to take down the whole sukkah on sukkah? So there's a Mishnah that says you shouldn't take down the sukkah on Shana Rabbah. So Rashi said, because you may have to eat a meal there. What if I'm going out of town? I'm going to leave Hashanah Rabbah, Shmini Atzeres, and Tuster. I'm going to be by my children in a different part of the world. I'm not going to be over here. So is the reason why you're not allowed to take down the sukkah because you may yet need the sukkah until the end of the day of Hashanah Rabbah? So then if I know I'm going out of town, I can take down the whole sukkah. But does Rashi say that you may need the sukkah? Maybe he means a different thing. Since it's still the zman of the sukkah, you want to eat a meal, you have to eat. You want to take a nap, you'll have to take the nap in the sukkah and eat the sukkah. So therefore, the sukkah is huktzah l'mitzvah, so specially designated only for use as a sukkah. And we usually assume huktzah l'mitzvah means not allowed to take down part of the schach and use it as a toothpick, or to use it as something else to hang up my laundry on, or something. So not only is it prohibited huktzah l'mitzvah, so you're not going to get any benefit from it by taking it away from the mitzvah and using it for your own purposes, but you're not allowed to take it down there. You're not allowed to be mevatel it in mitzvah site. That could be that that's a biblical prohibition. So this collection of Ikari Hadad, so this Talmud Chacham, this was a big dispute in his yeshiva. The Talmidim were arguing about that. What did Rashi mean? Commenting on the Mishnah in Sukkah, you're not allowed to take down the Sukkah. On Shana Rabbah, Rashi says, because you may have to eat there later. If you know in advance, you're not going to eat there, so you're allowed to take down the Sukkah. No, Rashi means since it's still the Zman of the Mitzvah, so it'll be a violation of Muktzah Mitzvah, so even if you don't gain benefit, just to take down the Sukkah. So it's a big question. Are you obligated to pay rent? To leave the sukkah there, you know, you're not going to use it at all in the last couple of days of sukkah. You're going to be somewhere else completely. So that's a real serious question. Halacha l'maisa. In the late 1200s, early 1300s, started a study of Kabbalah in Italy. Menachem Ricanti. He has a commentary on Chumash. He has a lot of Kabbalah there. In the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from a Menachem Ricanti that a Talmud Chacham had a dream on one of the nights of Sukkot when he went to sleep. He visualized in the dream a Sefer was writing a Sefer Torah, and every time he wrote the name of God, the four letters Yud Kei Vav Kei, he wrote Yud A and the next letter above together. And then he left a long empty space and he put the final A very far away. The Sefer Torah is not kosher. You have to write them. You have to write all the letters of the same word. Here it's the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to write all the letters together. You have a big space in between. It's not good. So he didn't understand why are they showing him in this dream. What are they trying to show him? There was a sefer who was writing such a sefer Torah. So he realized that the chalom was shown to him because there was somebody in the shul who was shaking the lulav and the esrog. The Gemara says, you hold the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the left hand. So he held the lulav in the right hand on the right side and the esrog in the left hand on the left side, not near each other. And the four minim, the lulav, arovas, hadasim, and esri are parallel somehow, according to Kabbalistic understanding, to the four letters of the name of God, yudke vovke. So they were showing him in the dream that that's not right. Although you have, see, a lot of people when they say halel, so they hold the lulav and the esri in their right hand, and they hold the siddur in the left hand. But when you go hashinus, a lot of people hold the lulav and the esrog in their right hand, and they hold the hashinus, that they hold the siddur in the left hand. So this is questionable. Some rishonim insist you have to hold them in two different hands. So they say that in Brisk there was only one lulav and esrog for the rabbi and one lulav and esrog for the chazan, and the balabatim couldn't afford it; wasn't available. In America, it was a very common practice years ago when I was growing up, and not everyone had a lulav and esrog. Shul had one set, and the rabbi had one set, that's it. Everybody else would ask the rabbi to use the shul set. And they would have in mind Matanam and Aslach, and they had in mind the first 2 days of Sukkot, the Dalet Minim, the Lulav and Esrog have to belong to you. They had in mind that they're acquiring ownership and then giving it back to the shul, giving it back to the rabbi. That's called Matanam, Matanam and Aslach, giving it back. So when the Chazan would go with the one set that the shul had, Risk. So the husband held the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the left hand, and another person would be walking in front of the chazan, walking backwards, holding the siddur, because it's not right to hold the lulav and the esrog in the same hand. We're going to have bronchos. Some rishonim say, if you hold everything in the same hand, you're not yotze. You have to dafka hold them in two different hands. So this chacham, during the lifetime of the Rikanti, was holding the esrog in the left hand far away from the lulav in the right hand. So that was the dream that he was shown, that the four meter was supposed to be parallel to the four letters of Hashem. And you shouldn't move away the last hay from the other three letters. You shouldn't have the esrog moved away. People say that the earliest source is a practice that when a couple, when a chas and kala get married, so the kala has to go to mikveh, that we understand. Laws of Taras and Mishpach apply to the women, doesn't apply to the men. But many have a practice, I did not have that practice, many have a practice that the chassan goes to mikveh. Where does this come from? So they claim that the earliest sources in the Rikanti is Sefer on Chumash, that he records this minhag. What in the minhag doesn't make any sense? What is it based on? Why should you insist? Why should you even recommend that the chassan should go to mikveh? What does it have to do with anything? Some say, I don't remember what the Rikanti himself explains, but there are different explanations that are given. So some say that since the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us that when a chas and kala get married, they get, if they do tshuva, they'll be forgiven. All of their sins will be forgiven. Because of that reason, that's the reason why many have a practice that the chasim wears a kippur, just like the kagodol on Yom Kippur. Wears big day logon to represent the idea of purity and mechilas avinus. Even if the averas are red, like dark red, if the people will do tshuva, all the averas will be forgiven. So some have the practice, many have the practice today, that the chosu wears a kittel. Not everybody has the practice. Many communities have such a practice. So similar to that practice is that the chosu should go to mikvah also. Like on Erev Yom Kippur, there's an old practice, the Rosh, at the end of Yuma quotes this in the same Rav, Neymar Abdena Sadigoyen, in his commentary, his translation of the Chumash. He writes that when you go to Mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur, you have to recite a bracha, Asher Kedushanu B'Mitzoyse B'Tzibonu Al HaTzibon. And the Rosh disagrees, what kind of bracha is a bracha latola? Well, it's a minig. Since when? What's going on? Why should you say a bracha? So the commentaries explained the Rav Sadigoyen understood that that's pshat in the pasuk. Lifnei Hashem titaru, it says in connection with Yom Kippur. Lifnei Hashem means before Yom Kippur enters, titaru, you should purify yourselves. So the Ramban explains Lifnei Hashem titaru, as Yom Kippur is about to enter, Lifnei Hashem, before you enter into the presence of God on Yom Kippur, titaru, recite vidui. You should say vidui before Yom Kippur enters. And the Rav Sadigoyen answered, Lifnei Hashem Titaru, before Yom Kippur enters, you should go to mikveh. Mikveh is a symbol of purification. One will be purified from others. And some say that's the reason why the Rikanti recommends that the chosen should go to mikveh. God is going to go to mikveh anyway, but the chosen should also go to mikveh to symbolize, to represent the fact that when one gets married, the Talmud Yerushalmi says that he gets mechilas habayinus. Others give it a slightly different twist, maybe a very different twist, that a non-Jew who wants to convert has to go to mikveh. This is similar to the psukim in Chumash that when was Bechiras Kohanim, when Aaron and Banav were chosen to be Kohanim, so they all had to go to mikveh, it says. That's like a Nochri who converts, receives Kedushas Yisrael. So when Yisraelim became Kohanim, when the institution of Kuna was originated, so the original Kohanim had to go to mikveh. Once they were Kohanim and they got married and they had children, so the children were naturally born Kohanim. Just like if Nochri converts, so then the children that he has later on are going to be Jewish by birth. They don't have to be Jewish by going to mikveh. So the original Kohanim, when they were chosen, it's gone, had to go to mikveh. Then the din is that when a Kohen wants to be makor karbonis in the Beis HaMikdash, the karbonis had to be offered only by Kohanim. The Kohanim have to wear the big kahuna. When they wear the big kahuna, then their level of kedusha is elevated. They have a higher level of kedushas kahuna, sheba mikdash. This kedushas kahuna, big vulin outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that prohibits the kohen from marrying a grusha, prohibits the kohen from going to a cemetery, and allows the kohen to eat truman. He doesn't have to wear big kahuna when he's eating truman. But when he wants to be a makor karbanis, he needs a higher level of kedushas kahuna. This man should be day malayim kuhn osam alayim. When he puts on the big kuhn, his level of kedushas kuhn will be elevated. And that's why the Mishnah says when a kohen, whenever a kohen is about to put on big kuhn to do avodah in the korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, he has to go to mikveh because his level of kedusha is going to be elevated. So that's perhaps the reason why the minig is for the days of the Rakanti, maybe earlier. If the chosen goes to mikveh, the kala is going to go to mikveh anyway. Chosen also goes to mikveh, because the Gemara says when a couple gets married, there's a new element, there's supposed to be a new element of Kedusha entering into their lives. The word Ish, the two words Ish and Isha, where Ish has a Yud, where Ish has a Hey, this is what the Gemara points out. So Shechina Shkuri Beinei, if the couple is married, then they have a Hashuas Hashchina. And if their marriage is dissolved because they have machlekes, so then the Shechina leaves, the Yud and the Hey, representing the name of God, leaves, and you're left with Eish, Aleph Yud Shin, Eish, and Isha Aleph Shin Hey. You take out the Yud and the Hey, you're left with Eish, and Eisha machlekes, that's there. So whenever one is about to obtain a higher level of Kedusha, so the din requires like a ger. You have to be toivel and a mikveh to be able to receive that higher level of kedusha. Those are the two suggestions why there's such a meaning that the chasen goes to mikveh. But it's they say that the first source and writing of that practice is in the Rakanti Sefer. Maharil lived in Germany. He recorded all of them in Hagim, when they say which slichas and which kinnis, which miutim he say, one Rosh Hashanah falls out on a weekday, one Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Shabbos, all the various minhagim. One of the Talmidim of the Maharil was the Maharit of Yosef Kolon, who lived in learned in Germany by the Maharil, and then he moved to Italy, to northern Italy. So the Maharil set down all of the practices for Yom Kippur, Tanesim, the Utensilim, the Marik also, here's a column. They quote the Marik and Orechaim on every other page, almost quote on every page. He set up all the practices, how you read the Megillah, how you do Kriyas HaTorah, how you have Tefillin, how you have Tzitzis. He set up everything that we follow today. And he lived in northern Italy. one of the more prominent Talmidim of the Maharit was Rabbeinu Avadya Bar Tinurim, who wrote the commentary on Mishnayos. It was a fantastic commentary. He lived in Italy, he was born in Italy, learned by the Maharit, and then he decided he wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael. So he wrote the whole little booklet, like a travelogue, about the different communities, like the Binyamin of Tudela. So he wrote all the different communities that he came upon on his way to Eretz Yisrael. Then he lived the last years of his life. He lived in Yerushalayim, and he's buried over there. So the Bar Tinurim wrote this fantastic commentary on the Mishnayos that everybody uses today. I just recently, we attended a bris, a grandchild of one of our neighbors. So the rabbi in the shul announced that they're about to bring the baby into the shul to perform the bris. So out of respect for the baby, everyone should stand up. So the Bar Tinura has a famous comment, Mishnayos Bikurim. The Mishnah says when the farmers were pilgriming, they were walking to Yerushalayim to bring their Bikurim. After Shavuos, you start bringing Bikurim. So the Mishnah says, out of respect for the farmers who were, they were not learned people, the Chumash says you have to stand up out of respect for someone who's learned Torah knowledge. So the farmers were not known for their, there are some farmers who are big Talmid Chachamim, but the farmers were not known for their specialization in learning Torah, but they're in the process of walking to perform a mitzvah. That's why we stand up, out of respect for the people who are on their way to do a mitzvah. The Bar Tinura says, when they bring in the baby for the purpose of the bris, everyone stands up not out of respect for the baby. The baby didn't do anything yet in his lifetime, but he should command our respect. We're standing up out of respect for the kvater who's bringing the baby, the one who's carrying the baby. The kvater is the godfather. The Goyim, they would call it the Godfather. Somebody else would call it a Kvata. A Godfather. So we're standing up out of respect for the Kvata who's bringing the baby to perform a mitzvah of Mila. And the same thing, Bar Tinura says, when the Chevra Kadisha bring a Nifter into the room, and they're going to deliver a Hesped, so you're not standing up out of respect for the Nifter. They never stood up for him when he was alive. Why should we all of a sudden stand up after he died? So the Bar Tinura says, no, it's out of respect for the Chevra Kadisha who are performing a mitzvah now. And in fact, many say that there was a very old minhag in the days of the Rishonim, they had the minhag when the Chas and Kala marched down the aisle to get married. So you stand up. So some say because Chas and Dagmal Melech, but that's not really Rabbi Soloveitchik, but we used to make fun of that, and the Rishonim make fun of it. He say he's not a Chasin yet. Because in Daim HaMalach is the first week, Shuzim HaMishnei, after he gets married. He didn't get married yet. He's engaged to the girl, but he didn't get married yet. So the Rishonim say, the reason why you stand up for the Chasim, some stand up for the Kalim, because they're walking down the aisle to perform a mitzvah. One is about to perform a mitzvah. He's on his way to do a mitzvah. You have to stand up out of respect. We have a minhag that when we, pretty widespread minhag, when we recite Pesukei Dezimra every morning, so the whole Pesukei Dezimra, we say, Baruch Sh'amar Yishtabach, in the standing position. And then on Shabbos and Yom Tov, when the Baruch of Yishtabach begins from Nishmas Kol Chai, it's called Birchas Hashir. The Birchas Hashir begins on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it begins from Nishmas Kol Chai. So then he had the practice that the Chazan who takes over should start from Nishmas Kol Chai, and start from Hakel, or HaMelech, or Shochanan. The Chazan should start from a lot of Chassidish Rebbes have that minute. They would start davening for an Amid from Nishmas Kol Chai. You should stand just like we stand for Baruch Shammah Yishtabach on the weekdays. You should stand. Yishtabach begins on Shabbos and Yom Tov with Nishmas Kol Chai. When a person has to abridge the Pesukim in Zimra, so we're all, as little children, they told us the secret. You can abridge the Pesukim in Zimra by reciting Baruch Shammah, Ashrei and Yishtabach. So the Chayyodim quotes in the name of the Vilna Gaon. He writes he was a Mechutin of the Vilna Gaon. Not exactly, he was a Mechutin, one of the children of the Vilna Gaon, but it sounds nicer to say Mechutani Hagra. He delivered a Hesped when Mechutani Hagra passed away. So he quotes his Machut, the Vilna Gaon said, that on Shabbos at Yaltif, if one came in late, then he has to arrange Pesuk in his Imra. You have to say, Baruch Shama Ashrei, and Nishmas Kol Chai, to reach that one. Because on Shabbos at Yaltif, the Baruch begins with Nishmas Kol Chai. So, why do we stand when we say Vayvarach David? Why is Vayvarach David more important than the rest of the Pesukim that we stand for that? So some explain because of Vayvarach David, we mention this is Kabbalah, we mention the seven spheres. Hashem Akdula Vagur Vatiferes Manesach Vahal Yechol Cholas Yisod Hashem Amalachas Malchus. And because you're mentioning the seven spheres, so you treat it as if it were a Dovish of Yedusha. Everybody stands up. That's probably the real reason why. So they say Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, they say it's written in his Sefer on Aruch Haim also. But even before it was printed, that's the way they used to say the name Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. He thought that there's a meaning when he said, Hashem, Ba'ishav HaKavod Mufanecha, that the wealth that people have comes from the Hashemayim, because Baruch gives us wealth. So the meaning was when the Sarah covered Mulfanacha, he put a pruta into the pushkin, he put some money in the tzedakah box. So the Gaba used to walk around with the tzedakah box at the beginning of Vayvarach David. And the Pesachei Tshuva writes in Yerideya and Hilchas Tzedakah that just like when the Chevra Kadisha bring in the mace, everyone stands up out of respect for the Chevra Kadisha. That's what the Bartanura says. When the Kvata brings in the baby for the priest, they stand up not out of respect to the baby, but rather out of respect for the Kvata, because he's doing a mitzvah. So when the Gabbai walks around with the pushka, you have to stand up out of respect for the Gabbai. He's doing a mitzvah, he's getting people to give tzedakah. So because the Gabbai would start walking around with the pushka at the beginning of Vayvarach David, so people would be able to give the money when they say, Yoshua, cover the Mohammed. That's why you stand up for Vayvarach David. On Shabbos and Yotam, no one's giving any money, because all week long, the Gabbai would walk around, so the minute remained like that. Everybody stands up for Vayvarach David. Anyway, but that's a famous Bartanura. He comments on the Mishnah of Bikurim, that the reason why we stand up when they bring in the baby for the bris is not out of respect for the baby. The baby didn't do anything yet that he should command any respect. Out of respect for the Kvata who is bringing the baby to perform a mitzvah. The Bartanura wrote also a commentary on Pirush Rashi al HaTorah. Rashi on Chumash is fantastic. He's usually quoting from Tanoim or Gemaras or Midrashim. Whenever he writes something about Dikduk, that's on his own. But whenever he's writing something of significant contents, it's usually not on his own. He's quoting from the Tanoim and the Gemaras and so on. So a lot of times the Rashi is a little unclear. So the Bartanura wrote a commentary that he calls Amar Noka. Amar is Tzemer. Tzemer Noki. That expression is based on a pasuk in Daniel. Daniel had a vision. He visualized in his dream as if God was an old man. He had long white hair. Sari Kitlak Chiver. His hair was white like Shelek. Kitlak Chiver. And Rabushe and his Malbush was Kahamar Noka, like white Tzemer. And then the Mukubalim say, the same Hasidim quotes this from the Mukubalim, that the Malbush of HaKadosh Baruch and that vision that Daniel had was he was wearing a talus, and the talus was white. So that's why I think Kabbalah it's not right to wear a talus, a colorful talus, like a Shlomo Karbat used to have a talus with different patches with different colors, psychedelic colors. So they say, the Hasidim says, you should wear a malbush, a talus like the Rabban Shlom wears, a white garment. So that expression, Amar Nokat Semenoki, comes from that pasuk in Daniel, that the beged that the Rabban Shlom was wearing was a white talus. So that he tries to make clear, white means when things are clear and understandable. So every so often when there's a difficulty in Pirush Rashi al HaTorah, so the Bartanura will give a comment. So there's one, a few times he has very fascinating comments. When Yaakov has to run away from Esav, and he comes to the home of Lavan, So the woman says, oh, please come. Anochi benisi habayis. I clean out the house for you. So Rashi quotes in that which, benisi habayis me avodah zara. You clean out the house, then no avodah zara is in the house. It's a medrash. So how does a medrash, how do you see that in the pasuk anochi benisi habayis? So I remember my father had a European set of Chamisha Chumshi Torah with the Mefarshim printed there, and it had Amar Nofe printed in the back. Now they print it as a separate sefer. My father had the old edition of the Gros Gedolos at Amar Nofe at the end. He used to look at it a lot. So he has a very strange comment. He says, in Hebrew, the word Ani is neutral gender, and the word Anochi is female. So that's the problem. Why did Ravon, he was a man, why did he say Anochi? He should have said Ani Penisi. So the reason why he said Anochi is because Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I cleaned the house out of respect for Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So remember, the next day, I came to high school. I asked my high school teacher, Lator Tanach, is that correct? That the word Anochi is feminine. So he said, he never heard of such a thing. So that's not correct. He said, never heard of it. There's another Bartanura in his commentary on Pirush Rashi. The Pasuk says, when a married woman has an affair with someone else, Uvesu Gam Shneihem, they both deserve the death penalty. So why does it say the word Gam? Uvesu Shneihem. Why Gam? So Rashi is quoting for the Tanaim, Gam Le Rabos, the word Gam is a Riva Haboy Machareihem. So what does that mean? It's a different interpretation. So the Amar Noka, the Bartanura, in his commentary on the Rashi Ala Torah explains that once a woman has an affair, a married woman has an affair with someone else, the ishus is broken. The ishus only, from now on, the ishus, the marriage relationship only contains isa the kuli alma, no longer contains a heta la baila, she's no longer allowed to live with her husband. So since the ishus is broken, one might have thought that it's like a chatzishir of a violation of baalishus ish. Maybe the next one has an affair with the woman will not deserve the death penalty. That's what the Bartanura says. No, Gam the Rabbis, Rashi says, Gam the Rabbis Haboy Macharem, even the Boil Sheni is also Chagmisa. So Abdes Engel has a whole essay about that idea. There are sources in the Gemara to indicate like that. But when a woman is not faithful to the husband, the marriage is partially broken. The head of the Baila disappears and you only have the Israel Puli on it. But the Bartanura's commentary on Mishnayos is why he's most famous.
Somehow the Chassidish Rebbe is all made up.
So, see, the Shireb is all made up. That whoever will blow Shofar first, Rosh Hashanah, whoever will blow Shofar earliest, his prayers will be answered. Because the Tkiya Shofar, the blowing of the Shofar, is a form of davening. So each one of the Rebbes was rushing to get to the Tkiya service. Usually by the Hasidim, they start davening later than everybody else. But on that Rosh Hashanah, somehow they all thought whoever's going to blow Shofar first, his prayers will be answered. So one of the Rebbes who was praying that the Polish should win, he told the Hasidim they're going to start davening at the crack of dawn, and going to daven quickly, and he's not going to give any sermon before the Tkiya Shofar. They're going to leave out a lot of piyutim. They're going to abridge everything like we did in a lot of shuls during COVID. And we left out all the piyutim and you can go to home early. That's not what the Kivegan did, but there was an epidemic in Germany during his lifetime. So with all of the rushing and everything, when they finally blew Shofar in the middle of Musaf, he felt as if he lost, as if he lost already. So he said somehow the Litvak beat him out. The Litvak, he was referring to the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. He beat him out, so he said he's going to have to find out how did he succeed in blowing Shofar before him, because he rushed. So a few months later they met on some occasion, and he asked him, how did you blow Shofar so early on Rosh Hashanah? So the Alter Rebbe said he thought that it was so important. Blue Shofar before Shacharis. He said you have to wait till Musaf. Blue Shofar before Shacharis. Well, that is so essential. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a lot of French Hasidim who followed him. And he instructed them that they should try to find out the secrets of the French army, what they're planning to do. He saw to it that the secrets were given over to the Russian army to make sure that Napoleon should lose the war. And Napoleon's men found out about that. And they decided they're going to chase after this Rabbi Shneerson. That was the name of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. That was the name of the best two Rebbes also. I don't know if the Roshn is, maybe the Roshn is. But so they were chasing after him, and they assumed that he was in a certain village in Khaslavich, and when they surrounded the village, they had all the Russian soldiers, the French soldiers surrounded the village, and they were going to go look from house to house to find where Shneerson was hiding. So the Hasidim wanted to know if they could hide the Rebbe at the rabbi's home. The rabbi was from Lavozhin. The rabbi was a Misnagid. So they didn't know if he would hide out the Rebbe, because there was a big debate between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim at that time. So they went to ask the Rebbe, they went to ask the local rabbi, would he hide out the Rebbe? And when the French soldiers come knocking on the door, they ask if he knows where the Rebbe is, would he tell a lie and say he doesn't know where he is? So he said he's not happy about the Hasidic approach to Judaism. Doesn't agree with it, but he would never hand over the Rebbe to the enemy because they were going to kill him. He's a religious Jew, he's not going to hand him over. So the French soldiers were going from home to home, checking all the homes to find out where Shneerson was hiding. So when they came to the rabbi's home, so they asked the rabbi, do you know where Shneerson is hiding? So he put on a whole act as if he's prepared to choke Shneerson. They said, Shneerson, he's the greatest enemy of the Jewish religion. Give me the man, I'll choke him to death with my own hands. So they didn't bother to check in his house, but he says he'll choke him with his own. He was hiding in his basement. So they didn't check his home, and they checked all the other homes. They didn't find him. So after the French soldiers left the city, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe came out of hiding, and he said, sometimes it's a mazel, sometimes it's a worthwhile thing, it's a good, it's a maila, it's something positive that a Hasidic city has a Misnagdic rabbi. Because it turned out that that's what saved his life. The soldiers believed the rabbi who told a lie, and they saved Shneerson's life. So that's why from that time on, the rabbi in that village, Khaslavich, was always a Misnagdic from Valozhin Ishi. That's where Rabbi Soloveitchik was born. His father was also from the Kalojan Yeshiva. He was the rabbi in the village for 2 years. He was a rabbi in different villages in Europe. Throughout all the generations, there were big Talmid Chachamim in Europe. He's mentioned some from the days of the Vaisheni. After the Vaisheni, we showed him an early Achronim. So one of the early Achronim is Rabbi Nachum Azario, Rabbi Mifano. Nachum Azario Mifano. He lived from 1548 to 1620. He got a big Yerusha from his father. What did he do with the money? He used to support Talmud Chachamim. It's a big Talmud Chachamim. He was known to be very strong in Kabbalah. In the Shulchan Aruch, they discuss the fact that we recite Slichas a week before Rosh Hashanah, then on Aseres Teshuvah, and we start the Slichas after midnight, in the middle of the night, as an introduction to the davening for the day. Into chakras. So this whole system of setting up the slichas after Chatzaris and Hashmaras HaBoker, this in Shulchan Aruch, they say this was set up by the Rambam Yivam. So he was strong in Kabbalah. The Chasam Sofer, one of his tshuvas, writes about being clean shaven. So we usually assume that those who study Kabbalah are the ones who insist, like Lubavitch, they insist, you're not allowed to shave off your beard. You have to leave the beard growing. So the Chasam Sofer, one of the Jewish writes, that he heard that the Rambam Yivanah was very strong in Kabbalah, despite the fact that they say that he was clean shaven. But when you look in all the books, they have the paint, they don't have any photographs, they didn't have photography then. But all of the paintings that they have of the Rambam Yivanah, they all have them with a beard. So they think that someone must have given this information to the Chasam Sofer. That's with everybody's knowledge that Rambam Yivanah did have a beard. We spoke yesterday a little bit about the fact that the days of the Gemara, they used to wear tefillin all day long. At night you don't wear tefillin. The question then in Tanaim, whether that's a din in our Torah, is that a biblical din? Is that only a rabbinical din that you don't wear tefillin? We only wear tefillin, but in the days of the Gemara, they wore tefillin all day long. Except when they had to go to the bathroom, they took it, but they would eat their meals with the tefillin on. Then the Rishonim changed the practice, and they said that you're only permitted to wear tefillin if you have a good knocky. The body has to be clean, and the mind should have a clean mind. Of course, we're concerned that everybody has a problem of good knocky today, so we've cut down on the wearing of tefillin to the very essentials. So we don't recommend that women should volunteer to wear tefillin, even though the good knocky here. Shaking movements in Sukkim, this is the Kiyah Shofar, you volunteer the other mitzvahs that they're exempt from. They're not filling because they need good knocking, not that the women have a bigger problem than the men. Everybody has a problem, so we cut back on the wearing of filling to the very essentials. So we don't wear filling all day long, only when we down the shachris and children before bar mitzvah. Days in the Gemara, the many Sfarim still have the practice. Children start wearing filling, boys at the age of 8. But by the Ashkenazim, we cut down on that. In Shulchan Aruch, it says you don't let the children wear tefillin before the bar mitzvah. Today, the practice is you start a month before, you start a few months before. There used to be a practice, you say, man, if the child was an orphan, he had no father. So orphans would usually mature at a younger age. An orphan, they would have a wear tefillin, and many kids to have a wear tefillin a year before his bar mitzvah, also not from the age of it. So the Rambam Yivanah was Yodua, that he used to wear tefillin by Mincha also. There were Musar Kollelim in Europe. Some of the Kollelim, they were called Musar, they would also wear tefillin by Mincha, not just by Mekubalim. But that was famous, that the Rambam Yivanah used to wear tefillin by Mincha. He has a collection of tshuvas. There's one of his tshuvas that's more famous than most of the others. He raises a question. We have a din, Mitzvah Hayom Kikulo. If a person is observing Avelis, so you only have to observe a little bit of Avelis the morning of the last day. Sometimes, let's say, Shiva, the morning of Shiva, the morning of the seventh day, or the last day of Shloshim, so the morning of the 30th day. You observe the Avelis for a little bit, then you call it quits. Sometimes the Avelis only consists of one day. If a person finds out about the death of the relative, in a delayed fashion. He didn't find out till 30 days after the relative died. That's called Shmur Rechoka. So then one only observes Avelus for one day, and then that one day it chiseled down. You say Mitzvah Se Al Kekula. If you observe the Avelus a little bit in the morning after one day, that's sufficient. So the Rambam Mikana raised the question, why shouldn't people do the same on Shabbos and Yom Kippur? Observe Shabbos in the morning, Davin. Shabbos, they could Davin, then go to work. It's the same thing on Yom Kippur. That was his discussion. So he gives an answer. He says, by Inyoni Kedusha and Simcha, you don't say Mitzvah Kekula. You want to be Mosif Mechayel Ola Kodesh. You want to have more Simcha. So let's say Achasim, Shibbos and Me'am Mishnah. Achasim Kala celebrate for 7 days. He says, you don't say Mitzvah Sayyam Kekula. And he bases it on the Pasuk that Lavan tells Yaakov. Yaakov wanted to marry, if he married Leah, he wanted to marry Rachel also. So yeah, so Lavan tells him, Alesh Bozos, says, fill up the whole first week of Shiva Sibam Mishnah with your first wife, and then we'll have you marry the sister, marry Rachel. So hey, Malesh wants us for the full 7 days. You shouldn't say this to say on the Kulai on the morning of the 7 days. So the same is in Yoni Simcha to rejoice, and Yoni Kedusha, Shabbos and Yom Kippur, we want to be Mosif Mechala, because we want to add on more. When it comes to Adelas or it comes to Tumah, so then you could say Mitzvah Se'al Kekula. We want to get rid of the tumah as soon as possible. We want to terminate the Avelus, the mourning period, as soon as possible. So that's the official answer that Rambam Yifanu gives in his work. So one of the Gaonim from 100 years ago, Rabbi Yosef Engel, quotes this in his Sefer on Gemara Nazir, and he doesn't accept that as the correct answer. He says there is a dispute in the Gemara if the person accepts upon himself that they're to act like a nazir. A nazir doesn't take a haircut, and he doesn't go to the cemetery, and he doesn't drink any wine. That's the parsha and the chodesh, parsha is also. So the Gemara has a dispute, and we pass it along on the maisa, that even though the nazir is called kodoshi here, gadel peres aroshim, one who accepts a net of naziris is bringing about himself a certain degree of kedusha. Nonetheless, we do say Mitzvah Se'al Kekula on the last day of the Naziris. Let's say he took a net of Naziris to observe Naziris for 50 days, for 60 days, for 150 days, whatever. You have to have a minimum of 30 days. But as long as, however, whatever amount of time they accept that net of Naziris, he has to observe it. But on the last day of the net, you say Mitzvah Se'al Kekula. So you say, even though Naziris is in, you know, Kedusha Kodoshi, you still said makes the same. So what's the answer? Why don't we say it on Shabbos and Yom Tov? So the more correct answer is totally different. You don't apply makes the same kukula to a calendaric day. All day long is Shabbos, all day long is Yom Tov. The 15th day of this is Pesach, and so on. The 6th day of Sivan is Shavuos. The whole thing is Shavuos. What do you mean, Mitzvah Kekula? The whole idea of Mitzvah Kekula only applies if you're superimposing some unit of time on top of the calendar. Someone dies, people die, all year long people can die. It's not a calendaric day. When someone dies, they have to be buried, then you shouldn't begin, or the shlo should begin. The person accepts the zeros. He superimposes the day on the zeros on the calendar. It's not written on the calendar, it's not a calendaric day. So Tumah, Zavim, that's a Molos. Molos means an amount of time, a unit of time superimposed on the calendar, and then you say Mitzvah Se'al Kekula. We don't really accept the answer that the Rambam Yifanu gave. He wrote a sefer called Asura Mamoros, has a lot of Kabbalah in it, and it's quoted by Mother Abraham a lot of times, with the Rashi Tevis Yudnev, Asura Mamoros. Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch in the mid-1500s, lived in Tzfat in Eretz Yisrael. His family lived in Spain, but then when it came to Spanish expulsion, they all ran away. And that's when the community, Jewish community in Tzfat grew tremendously after the Spanish and the Portuguese expulsion. So Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote his Beis Yosef in Eretz Yisrael. consented to the Rambam Eifano that he should take care of the printing, because there was a Hebrew printing press in Italy at that time. So he not only took care of the printing, he paid for it. He paid for the whole printing from his own money. At the same time, the Rambam Eifano...
I'm going to pay for the water.
Oh.
He was very strong learning. There was another, his name was Menachem Azariah Eifano from the city of Rambam in Italy. There was another Azariah Ben HaAdomim, Azariah B. Rossi. He was a religious Jew. He was his family, was one of the four Yuchazdika families that were exiled from Yerushalayim by Titus at the time of the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash. He was, in his book, that's called Mo'or Einayim, Enlightening One's Eyes. So he sometimes makes fun of Agadas in the Gemara that don't make any sense. So there's a Kara and many other Talmidei Chacham of the generation were very upset about him. So he said they should put the book in Cheirem, they should burn it, you should read the book. And he also has a complaint about, we say that this year is 5,784 years since Kriyas HaOlam. So he claimed that count is not accurate. It's based on whatever dates of Birkat Tanakh are assumed to be accurate. However, the question is how long did the Bais Sheni live? So the Talmud has a tradition, the Bais Rishon lasted 410 years, the Bais Sheni lasted 420 years. So Azariah de Rossi, Azariah ben HaDaimon, he tied it that he thinks that it's off by at least 100 years. They felt it was a shtickal abikairis. But as the years went by, many agreed with it that it probably is inaccurate. In fact, before he wrote it, the Baal HaMahor, Rabbeinu Zvi Halevi, in the first paragraph of Shoshana writes that it's a known fact that the Gemara's history is not accurate about the length of the Bais Sheni. It was way more than 100 years longer than what the Gemara says. I had to be right in the Ksuv and be right in the Gittin. How many years? The whole date is inaccurate, so the answer is no. We write how many years it is for Kriyas HaOlam. The Nimishan Amon of God, according to the way we count in New York, by the way we count in New Jersey, whatever. That's the way we count. That's the way we count, even if it's inaccurate. But still, that's the correct date based on the way we count. So because of the Baal HaMahor also writes like that he's convinced the Goyish history books are more accurate than the Gemara. The Gemara statement that it's 520 years. 420 years is not accurate. And the Raibit, the Lord Beharusa, with the Balamor, is very upset about this. He thinks that the Gemara's history is more accurate. That's a question till recent times. I live in Washington Heights. A Rabbi Schwab was the rabbi in the Kores community for quite a few years till he passed away. He published an essay about this. His opinion was that the Gemara on purpose, that's his suggestion, the Gemara on purpose didn't want to give the accurate date of the Bais Sheni, that it lasted much longer, because the people would try to calculate when Moshiach is coming, and the Gemara said that's not proper. You're not supposed to try to figure out when Moshiach is coming. The Pesukim in Tanakh, it has to do with how long the Bais Sheni is. That was his suggestion, that the Chacham hated intentionally gave the wrong thing. So this, the book Mo'or Einayim that Rabbi Azariah de Rossi put out, so Rosh Hashanah said they should burn it, you should read it. It made a big stir that now it's a tax against the Akkadim that they were upset about that. Rabbi Prague also said you're not allowed to read his books because we need a tax thing. The big Kubbalim, he said, the Ricatti was the first of the Kubbalim in Italy. 100 years later, there was a Rabbi Yosef Mirgas, who wrote a book on Kabbalah Shaykharatim. It's written as a debate between two friends. About Kabbalah. So the Minkacha, the Minkas Aluza, right someplace that that is the best book one should read as an introduction to study Kabbalah, the Shem Rabbi. There's a fellow in Eretz Yisrael now. He's not a rabbi. He does work in computers, I think. So he put out a book in English explaining a lot of things in the Nefesh HaChaim of Chaim Volozhiner. And now he's working on an English translation of this Sefer Shem Rabbanim, Rabbi Yosef Nirgas. He wrote Halacha also. And he didn't publish his Trumas in Halacha. They weren't printed until after he passed away. One of his Talmidim was the one who wrote the Encyclopedia from the Yad Malachi in the 1700s. That's one. The Chidor wrote a few encyclopedias mentioned the other day. And Yad Malachi was a contemporary of the Chidor. And others were writing. Yitzchak was writing an encyclopedia. So the one who wrote the Yad Malachi, Rav Malachi HaKohen, is the one who published the Shubas that's called Liber Yosef by his Rebbe, by his Rav Yosef Hirgas. One of his more famous students of Yosef Hirgas was Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, who got into trouble because of his public shiurim on Kabbalah, and the Ashkenazi Rabbanim were very upset about him. He was a super genius. He's one who wrote the Mesillas Yeshorim. He wrote the Mesillas Yeshorim after they insisted that he should stop teaching Kabbalah so much. Mesillas Yeshorim is a classic. He died at the age of 40. In fact, we mentioned earlier today about the Bar Timura. Bar Timura died before the age of 40. Surprising, he wrote this commentary on Mishnah. He's such a successful sefer. He died before the age of 40. So the Rambam, Moshe Chaim Lutzato, who was a Talmid of this Rav Yosef Hirgas, so he was a trip. He could pick up the style of writing. So he picked up the style of writing of Sefer Tehillim. In Tehillim there are 150 chapters, according to the Gemara's tradition. 150 chapters. So he wrote 150 chapters of his own Tehillim, a whole manuscript, all imitation style. He picked up the style of Tehillim. Then he wrote in Kabbalah imitation Zohar. It's called the Zohar Hasheni, Zohar Tinyan. So the many Rabbanim were very, Ashkenazi Rabbanim were upset with him. The Swedish Rabbanim were never upset. They all held him in high esteem. But so they chased him. He lived in Italy. He was teaching. There were a lot of medical students, a lot of Jewish medical students. He was teaching Kabbalah, the medical students. So they were upset. But his Rebbe was Rav Yosef Hirgas, this one who wrote to Shem Ramonim. That's the introduction to all of Kabbalah. His Rebbe always supported him and through all of the attacks.
We're on the block, it's got a circle.